This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
As I was saying, the Malavalaki is really a bit of a mixture of a lot of things that we're going to try and do. First, it's just the Malavalaki, a kind of Malavalaki, which we have to say, very hard to work into the order of the family. Secondly, we've been trying to arrange an evening such as this. It wasn't necessarily going to be a Malavalaki, but we then decided to combine it. I think you're aware that part of the stress and emphasis of this Beis HaMidrash is not just learning the techniques of Torah learning, but it's developing a Torah approach to the things that go on around or about us, to develop an idea of being able to relate to the world as B'nai Torah. And that involves occasionally taking a look at the world. Resulting from various discussions that cropped up in a couple of shiurim, particularly the ladies' shiurim, we came onto the question of music. Music, firstly, in its power to affect people, is something we're aware of. And we were discussing music from a different point of view too, and that is that music in the religious Jewish community suffers the same fate as everything else does in the Jewish religious community. And that is that anything with a beard and a big black hat is frum, and anything without such a thing is not frum. And any tune that's dressed up with Hebrew words is kosher, and any tune which is not dressed up with Hebrew words is not kosher. And the same as you have to be a bit of a Talmid Chacham to know what meat is kosher and what meat isn't kosher. And you have to be a big Talmid Chacham to know what Jew is kosher and what Jew isn't kosher. We decided to investigate a little bit as to find the means of determining what music is kosher and what music isn't kosher. And Jeannie and I have been doing a little bit of research into it. I can only have intuitive feelings about it at best, as far as any kind of factual information is concerned, and either confirmation of those intuitions or denial of those intuitions are concerned. We're fortunate enough to have Jeannie with us, who is, I guess I say, not just a national but an international, internationally renowned composer and authority on music. And that's what we're going to look at this evening. We found, as we started doing a bit of the background work, that there's no way we're going to do anything but scratch the very superficial surface this evening. It's unbelievable what there is in this study and in this discussion. Really, we want to stimulate you with a couple of ideas, at least show you that there are elements that need to be looked at and that one needs to listen with a critical ear, that one needs to know what one's listening to, and not to be too biased and too, you have two ideas which are too preconceived. And we've decided to structure it in a way which is really going to be a bit of a dialogue between Jeannie and myself, and it's very unprepared. We've constructed just a very broad framework, and we would like to invite you to participate in that dialogue and to question either of us or both of us, Jeannie or myself, and to put forward ideas and to respond to some of the bits of music we're going to play to you. Jeannie is going to illustrate certain points with the organ that she's got here, so that we'll be able to get some kind of idea of what it is that we're talking about. And I think it's going to be a very fascinating subject. To start off with, we're going to do something very unconventional. I think maybe we should turn off the tape recorders and close the doors and windows. We're going to play a hymn. It's a Christian hymn. The words are "Rejoicing Christian Soldiers," right? It was composed. Yes, I'm telling you, it's true. It was composed by a Lutheran composer for the church, and we've run into all the halachic ins and outs as to whether we can play it or not. And I've decided that we can play it, and in fact, must play it. And with that, we'll start. And after that, Jeannie will say a few words, and so we'll launch into the discussion.
Thank you.
little Rami Meisen came up to me and said, may we sing Adon Olam to the tune of Mao Tzu? I said, yes, sure. And then I stopped to think, I wonder why he asked me that. It was only later this afternoon that I heard of the origins of the tune, where it, who it was composed by. Now, what is Jewish music? And that's, I think, where you take over from, Jimmy.
Yes, I've just finished playing that with Ivan Moore for 150 years. I think we all joined in as we were there, everybody came to the link. That's wonderful. Anyway, that seems to be happening more and more. Shall I say that we haven't developed the critical faculty to actually be able to distinguish between exactly what is Jewish music. This is going to be a very successful improvisation session to use musical tools. I've been very fortunate to have been teaching Czech at the background, but also grew up into a very musical British environment with Shurfai, Kazan, Yiddish folk magazines, and yet it's only very recently that I've come to thinking about the authenticity used. And in the beginning, when Rabbi Lapp and I began discussing this, we were both sort of using intuitive ideas about what constituted the sound of Jewish music. But there's an enormous literature written about this. And there are many, many theorists and researchers who have gone into this and tried to look at very old manuscripts and researching very old music to try and discover what the origins are. I think what we must try and establish is whether the music itself embodies that which is intrinsically Jewish. We have to try and work out what in fact characterizes this Jewishness about music. It would seem that Jewish music is based on three or four very basic modes. Now the word mode simply illustrates the characteristic constituent of the melodic framework. In other words, a melody, the way it is shaped, the way it is rounded, the beginning, the middle, and the end of the melody. And there are certain melodic shapes which fall into specific modes. These modes, their origins are perhaps a little bit hazy, but they are certainly universally considered to be the accepted, authentic Jewish modes. I can talk. Would you like to talk about the modes very much? Just to give a little bit of background. The first mode is the mode of Hashem Malach. Now I'm sure in the davening, when you come to this part in the service, you can more or less remember what kind of music accompanies it. There are many misconceptions about the whole aesthetic approach to the sound of the music. On a very superficial level, one always imagines a music that is in a minor key, or has a kind of a minor mode, or that sounds a little bit slow and mournful, must accompany words that are necessarily penitential, mournful, asking for forgiveness, etc. But these misconceptions have grown through the ages, probably as a result of the imposition of Western standards and more modern standards, and they don't necessarily apply to the earlier feelings about the accompany words that are necessarily penitential, mournful, asking for forgiveness, etc. But these misconceptions have grown through the ages, probably as a result of the imposition of Western standards and more modern standards, and they don't necessarily apply to the earlier feelings about the sound of its music. Now, for those of you who don't know what major keys or minor keys are, this is a major. It sounds really joyful and happy. There are no intervals in a particular key, in a particular triad of chords, which sound mournful, whereas. called the Hashem Allah, which is purely major, purely this type of sound. I'll say there are two that are the very characteristic motives which come out of the Hashem Allah. This sort of
the
used, the stick, if it's used, then the stick contains either a plea for Hashem's mercy, or a supplication, or a remembrance of the dead. So it is pretty solid. It's a very serious matter. And in fact, authentically speaking, should have remained in serious context. In Eastern European traditions, it is the dominant mode, used for all kinds of prayer. Among the Hasidim, it is almost the only mode known. And the last mode called the Sichah mode, it's the most varied, the variegated mode in the Minhag Ashkenaz. It's used for Tehillah, Bakashot, Tefillot, penitential prayer, lamentations, Kinnot, and confession of sin. It is based on notice of the chant of the prophetic blessing, but it has no unique beginning or ending. Most of its tunes are said to be in the natural minor, which are a little bit similar to the Magana Bort, which is a sort of natural minor, but much more varied for the time. I'm sure you've heard different pieces of the service, which sound a little bit different.
Music
the authenticity of the music has come down through the line of Hazanim, through the line of Cantor, to require very, very sincerely to maintain the authenticity of the Jewish music. Then you have the whole area of music, the music of Hasidic music. It's a very abused term, because you have things like Hasidic prophets within Israel, which have got very little to do with Hasidic music. Music written by the Rebbeim for the service of Hashem in the strictest spiritual, most profound sense. This is the kind of music we're talking about when we do talk, when we talk about Hasidic music. And we also come to discussing this very interesting difference between the Menhag Ashkenazi and Hasidic. Because the Hasidim, Shlomo Zalman Radis, said that music being the pen of the soul, an outpouring of the soul, the only comes through music, did away with general text. And in fact, the music, because he thought that the words, the text themselves, might detract from the emotions reaching as high up as they could or as they should. And he did away with text and these long, very spiritual sounding Nigunim, purely melody, were emphasized only by Yababa, Mamama, Yababa, those sort of meaningless, not words, but this was what he was there for the subject of the to reach the greatest emotional exposure. So what we want to discuss here is how Jewish music has often borrowed from the secular world, sometimes to its advantage, if that borrowing was more of a kind of a natural assimilation of perhaps one or two elements which did not destroy the essential authenticity of the music. I think we should put that onto the example.
I said one thing that I wanted to mention before we go on, just to get the love of music and serving it in this perspective. This is from an introduction to one of the Vilna Gaon's Torah. And he writes here, it's not the Vilna Gaon himself, this is the editor. The Vilna Gaon held that Kol HaChof Mot Mitzrachim L'Tzaratei Mat Kosha L'Nimba. All the sciences, all knowledge is required for our Torah and is included in it. The Yada'am Kulam L'Tachvitam, and he knew them all to their utmost. His kirem, and he used to mention them. Tochmat algebra, he used to be very knowledgeable in algebra. Mishulashim, trigonometry. The handasa, engineering. The chokmat musika, and the wisdom of music. The shikha hazayim, the will to go and praise music tremendously. Who hayar omer, he used to say as ki rov ta'amei torah v'sodot shirei alviyim, that most of the deep meanings of Torah and the Kabbalistic background to the songs of the Leviim, the Sodot Tikunei HaZohar, the principles of the Zohar, E'efshar Meida Bilada, it is impossible to understand without the knowledge of music. Bal Yada Yecholim B'nei Adam Lamutz Bekalut Nafsham Minei Mutea, and through music people can actually die through their souls just bursting forth in not joy, but something much more intense than that, ecstasy. The Yecholim Lahatayot HaMeitim B'Sodotea HaGnuzim B'Torah, and one could actually perform the revival of the dead with the principles of music that are contained in the Torah. Who Amari used to say, Kama Nigunim V'Kama Midot Evi Moshe Rabbeinu Alav HaShalom Mehasina. Moshe Rabbeinu brought a few basic melodies from Sinai, Vashar Murkavim, and the rest of them are all composed out of those basic melodies from Sinai. So whether these types of notes that Jesus has been talking about have their origins in Sinai, or whether it's something slightly different, we see the principle that there is something inherent that was handed down by God to Moshe together with the Torah. The music forms an integral part of Torah. All we want to try and do is try and find out what that music is that forms that integral part, and what music is really not part of Torah and shouldn't be part of Torah. Ah, I'll answer it from a Torah point of view, and Jeannie can perhaps comment on it from a more scientific point of view. From a Torah point of view, music is the most spiritual of all the experiences available to the human being. It has the least form. It's the most spiritual. Spirituality is to be able to experience ecstasy without physical stimulus. And music is the closest you can come, one but Torah. Music is the next one down. Because you've got to look at a physical thing. You've got to look at an object. We'll learn, we'll discuss it tonight. We'll listen to that.
Is
that
immediate contact?
Whatever
you are,
once had on that. The difference between vision and sound. The vision has the clarity and sound has the depth.
Once you have mentioned the apart from the three or four modes that you use the vision tracking or visiting the derives from, there's something called the structure, and what they think happens was that with the embellishment and the ornamentation of the senses that the Chazon had given the Tamika, it actually lost its quality. Because if one can put out all these ornamentations, one can find that clay here that could be a missing one too. So instead of all these little grave rocks, it would be very plain. Took it from Smith enough, it seemed to serve his feelings of patriotism too. this is a borrowing of a very fine piece of classical music, transposed into a country called Israel and given Hebrew words. And I think maybe that I left something tell you about that just a little. That's as much as I know about this.
I think there we have an example of a terribly sad lost opportunity when we think that with the founding of the state, this would be an opportunity for one country in the world to have a national anthem in music, something which is inherently Jewish, and in words, something which is inherently Jewish. And we find that the words could be the words of any other country. There is nothing in the words of our sister that connotates a Jewish country. Nothing at all. The revolution level isn't mentioned, the terrorism isn't mentioned. Well, it could be applied to any country. And we see the same reflection of secularity in the choice of music. To take a Hungarian song of patriotism and simply transpose it to say this is what we do, rather than use something which is inherently Jewish, we don't think it could be like that. Okay. Oh, so you're asking a very important question. Is it now feasible to borrow certain tunes from secular origins and elevate them into something that they can fit into something inherently Jewish? For that we're going to need to identify what is inherently Jewish and what isn't. We're going to play you just now a couple of tunes where you have musical styles incorporated from outside, some of them kosher, some of them not. I'll show you what's kosher and what isn't. So what's going to be here? Created it, or as close to it as possible, without trying to make it do all sorts of things. Just the music, as Judy said earlier, expressing itself, how can there be anything wrong with it? And this, Judy and I thought, is a beautiful example of music which is just the world's station trying to send the fight to it. It's like nature. We're listening to sounds, the beautiful sounds, the beautiful construction of music. It doesn't arouse in you any feeling of negativity in the country, any feelings of beauty and of elevation. There's nothing in that music which can enable it to play. And so such music would be incorporated, let's say, into gardening or into whatever. It would be fine, there could be nothing wrong with it. That's Jewish music. hear music generally, then Jesus is the God. So what is music as God gave it?
We spoke about pure as opposed to music bringing with it a program like the Moonlight Sonata. Most often these types of pieces of music anyway are not the intention of the composer. And given by well-meaning musicologists who thought it sounded like Moonlight, it would be a popular sample. But that's not the composer's part. It's not always easy to find what is good music. This piece of music we have now is known to the composer. Thank you. your experience of music. How much music have you heard? How much good music have you heard? If you're thrown into the deep end, and that is the deep end, that's the deep end of music, you will not be able to translate it into music. Music is not there to entertain. It may be a form of enjoyment. It should be a pleasurable experience, but it's not there to entertain. It's to elevate our spirits. And as I say, depending on what one has been exposed to previous to that, so you will translate it as either as a very logical outcome of what has been before, as a very prophetic looking ahead of what is coming, or else it just won't make too much sense to you.
The next two little pieces that we, I think we're going to play, maybe we should play them in sequence immediately one after another, but listen to them with a very open mind. The first piece I've selected on the basis of, is the kind of music that if I heard it coming from the church across the road from my home, from which I hear various types of music coming every Sunday morning, would it surprise me? The third piece of music was chosen as being a piece that wouldn't surprise me at all. It isn't anything else that I heard every Sunday morning from the church across the road. The second piece I'll say a word about before we actually put on our piece of music. Far more accessible and far more elevated and the purer understanding Jimmy was explaining than the earlier one. What constitutes essential Jewish liturgical music, Jewish Gavli music, I've got one good example of here, which we've come to, it's quite a bad recording, but perhaps we should just do that before we have a little bit more discussion. And then, very briefly, I would like to get on to the modern songs, the modern Jewish and Israeli and Israeli songs that we have, just to figure out how many of them are really Jewish.
Probably difficult.
would say if anything has kept their music pure, has kept their music Jewish, you must be able to dig in that way and expression their musical expression.
I wouldn't
judge
them, because if you're talking about people in the Jewish tradition, maybe the art musicians would have liked to
perform,
not involved in Western art music, but not the Jewish.
Yet a piece of real Jewish liturgical music. Up to now, what we've been distinguishing between is non-Jewish music and music which goes above being Jewish or non-Jewish. Now, this is real, real Jewish. I don't know why it is or what it is, but this I can guarantee is real Jewish, and Jimmy will have to explain why. Consider as inadmissible any music which is pure joy. after the destruction of the temple. Before the destruction of the temple, it's a different thing. Any music which is pure joy and has no craving in it, and no praying, and no vapors in it, the desire to please to God, that would not be Jewish music after the destruction of the temple. This little piece that we just had, part of it, which is very familiar to me, has an exaggerated example of a piece that has that. The words that are being sung express that, the tune, the melody, the way it's being sung, the whole thing around it in one is tremendous feeling of yearning and craving for the Ramishwar. That therefore is okay. I don't care really where it was created, if it was composed by a non-Jew, it wouldn't make any difference to me. The music is okay. The music is something which fits in well with the Jewish feeling that needs to be felt, particularly in that particular field. Perhaps you need to make a couple of comments and then we'll move to some of the modern stuff and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. Of Jewish melodies, some of which exist, some of which might be okay, some of which not so okay. Imagine if people living in my house with the used to cantata playing, whatever, imagine what Google do say about that. Imagine if on a Saturday night in the Mother Shabbos in my life, Malta, instead of hearing that, they heard the following piece that we're going to play now. What do you think the response would be?
Thank you.
that we did about the flow. What we're talking about is understanding that music can be either natural in the sense that it is just like nature, and the fact that go and look at a waterfall doesn't mean that you can't look at a waterfall, or that go and construct a waterfall, and it would be absurd to be told to think that way. So music that would be very This wasn't used in that sense at all. Obviously, music which is written for another is learned with a purpose and used as such would be something else altogether. That would be unacceptable to music. Certainly not in the case of Bach, where it was written for one God and it wasn't used in the sense, it isn't used as music. So it's nothing, that doesn't make it possible yet. That doesn't make it possible. That's not the other. That's not the other. It's not. And certainly, where it rises above any form of expression to that extent. This, what we just said, that's then you're getting into bad stuff. When you're talking about Jewish kings being handed down, yes, I mentioned to Jeannie, in fact, there are many families with their Shabbos table will not sing any tune which they didn't hear from their fathers. Okay. Well, the point that I'm saying is, okay, if you want to be killed by Bach's Easter cantata, that's fine. But don't listen to this one. Okay, just because this is all messed up, okay, this is special. That's the point that we're trying to look at it, being discerning beyond the wrapping in which the music is presented.
And this is a lot of our Ben Davis music has brought a lot of people back to Jewish Christ, and the words that are very kosher and everything, and they've influenced thousands and thousands of people around the world to say that this music is not.
This was something.
No, but I'm just saying it's simple. But I don't know, it sounds the same. It's like a you know what I'm saying? Well, music doesn't get Jewish
word. I just want to listen to another one, which is a very well known to you. I think I've got it too. Listen to this one and just think to yourself carefully. Listen to the words and the suitability of the music to the words.
Oh,
appeared like this, and it suddenly said beautifully Jewish, and it's the kind of thing one can listen to and experience my difficulty. The next tune is a very well known tune again. Bad instrumentation. Instrumentation again is as we had just now, with the dog voice. Forget about that. Listen to the tune. It's also a joyous, happy tune. But listen there, you'll notice it's joyous and happy, but it's just a lot again. of the tunes produced by Tom Bukoka, who knows what the Torah is and who expresses the music expression to the Torah in his music. And one notices it, one's able to pick it up, one's able to feel it.
Thank you.